UMass Amherst is hosting an online conference this weekend to commemorate the 50th anniversary release of the Pentagon Papers, a top-secret study that revealed a long history of government lies about U.S. involvement in Vietnam. The conference grew out of the university's acquisition of the personal papers of Daniel Ellsberg, who leaked the Pentagon Papers to the press. Ellsberg and other high-profile figures, such as Edward Snowden, are scheduled to participate and discuss topics including the Vietnam War, nuclear weapons, Watergate, and whistleblowing. WAMC's Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief Paul Tuthill spoke with one of the conference organizers, UMass Amherst history professor Chris Oppie. How did UMass Amherst come to acquire Daniel Ellsberg's papers?
Well, I give most credit to Rob Cox, who's the former director of the university's special collections and university archives. He died tragically last May, but one of his last acquisitions was to go out and meet Dan Ellsberg and convince him that the university was really an ideal place, given its long tradition of collecting papers about social justice and the quest for democratic change. And there was other competition from other universities, but Ellsberg was very impressed by some of the, not just Rob Cox, but other people from UMass who visited out there. And he also was still a lifelong friend of Randy Keeler, who's a kind of local Western Massachusetts lifelong activist who had really inspired Ellsberg, was one of, in fact, the most important inspirations for his release of the Pentagon Papers. Because he heard Keeler give a speech describing why he was willing to serve 2 years in prison to resist the Vietnam-era draft. So Randy Keeler's papers are also housed at the University of Massachusetts, so that was yet another inducement.
What does the Ellsberg collection consist of? What does it consist of?
It's amazing. I mean, Ellsberg saved virtually every scrap of paper that ever came his way. It's 500 boxes, a sort of treasure trove of materials, everything from an enormous correspondence with a vast number of people over his entire life to notes. He was an inveterate note taker, so they're notes on the Vietnam War, throughout its history, including the 2 years he was there in Vietnam working for the State Department. There are transcripts of speeches of which he's given hundreds, perhaps thousands in his life, kind of unfinished manuscripts, unpublished manuscripts, photographs. It's really a treasure trove.
And what are you planning to do with it?
Well, the university will house it permanently, and digitize not all of it, but significant portions, so it'll be available to the public, anywhere online. And I hope in the future we'll continue to build courses around it, so students can use the papers and learn from them. And we're hosting this conference coming up on Friday and Saturday, so I hope in the future we may be able to do some more things like that to draw attention to the archive.
Have historians requested to see the material, people perhaps planning to write books or anything like that, take a look at it?
So far there are two book projects underway. I'm doing one of them.
Okay.
And Ben Bradley Jr. Is former editor at the Globe, is writing a biography of Ellsberg as well.
What do you find fascinating about Ellsberg as an historical figure?
Well, maybe the most obvious thing is he, like millions of Americans, dramatically changed his point of view about the Vietnam War, also about nuclear weapons, because he was an earlier nuclear war planner at the RAND Corporation, the think tank. Except that his transformation from hawk to dove was a bit more dramatic than in most cases, because I don't think I can name another government official at his level of access to power and to classified information that broke so radically with the war policies that he had been supporting and took such personal risk to change those policies. I mean, he was indicted, of course, by the Nixon administration for leaking the Pentagon Papers to the press, and under the Espionage Act of 1917, there were 12 felony counts, so he faced a possible 115-year prison sentence. And, of course, that case finally got dismissed because just as it was nearing an end, the first Watergate trials were underway, which exposed the fact that the Nixon administration and Nixon himself had ordered criminal attacks on Ellsberg, most famously a break-in of his psychiatrist's office in search of information that they could use to smear and or blackmail him, but basically to silence him because they were worried that he might have other secret documents that he was going to release that would be damning to the Nixon administration. The Pentagon Papers themselves only go up to 1968, the year before Nixon took power, so really didn't have anything damning about Nixon himself.
But Henry Kissinger called Ellsberg the most dangerous man in America, right?
Yeah, he really ginned up the vitriol in the Oval Office, along with Haldeman and other aides. So convincing Nixon, and Nixon didn't take too much convincing that he really was, Ellsberg really was a dangerous character that they had to go after. And to go after the press as well. I mean, they issued an injunction to stop the presses, which was unprecedented in U.S. history. The federal government had never, had a federal court issue a prior restraint order on the publication. It's sort of flagrant violation of the First Amendment. And the Supreme Court, after just 2 weeks, ruled against the government. So even as they were deliberating, not just the Times and the Post, but some 17 other newspapers were publishing portions of the Pentagon Papers.
This weekend's conference is going to feature Ellsberg and who else?
Well, it's a extraordinary lineup of more than two dozen very distinguished journalists and scholars and whistleblowers and activists. Maybe the one that will get the most attention is Saturday afternoon. Panel called Whistleblowers, and it features Ellsberg along in conversation with Edward Snowden from Moscow, and will be moderated by Amy Goodman of Democracy Now. But there'll also be John Dean from Watergate period of work, counsel. He was a counsel to Nixon. Elizabeth Holtzman, who was the youngest congresswoman at the time and part of the House Judiciary Committee that was drafting the impeachment articles against Nixon. Hedrick Smith, who was one of the New York Times columnists that was writing, along with Neil Sheehan, some of the first Pentagon Papers stories, but also a lineup of lesser-known but really interesting and fascinating anti-war activists like Randy Keeler, who I mentioned earlier. And then there'll be a panel on the Vietnam War that features, among others, Francis Fitzgerald, who was a journalist who covered the war and wrote a book called Fire in the Lake, which won practically every possible book prize at the time. So, yeah, Ellsberg will give a keynote and appear on two panels, and it's sort of all day Friday and all day Saturday. It's free and online, but people who want to participate should will have to register in advance, which is easy. You just have to go to this, actually, maybe the easiest way is just to Google Ellsberg Conference, and the link will pop up.
Anything else you want folks to know?
Well, I just hope people will come because it's really not just a kind of examination of the history of the 60s and 70s, but we're really trying to make an effort to connect the issues of that day, make them relevant to the present. So we have a final panel about the endless wars of the 21st century. So I think you don't have to be an expert on this earlier history or know much, if anything, about Ellsberg to, I think, get a lot out of it.